Are recording. All right.
Yeah, it
Over
was.
to you.
Yeah.
Over to you, Francis.
Okay, well, hello everyone. Welcome to this first webinar on The Light of the Soul, the only blue book that DK actually co-authored with Alice Bailey. As you probably know, AAB authored a number of books on her own, and for the rest of the blue book, she acted as an amanuensis for the Master DK, except for Light of the Soul. In this book, DK dictated an esoteric paraphrasing of the Sutras of Patanjali. AAB then wrote her commentary, and finally, DK reviewed and adjusted her commentary to make sure it aligned with his intended esoteric meaning. So it's a unique book in that way. The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the original sutras, were composed as a systematic science of spiritual discipline, outlining the methods by which an aspirant can still the mind, establish inner harmony, and ultimately attain a union with the universal spirit. In Light of the Soul, DK paraphrases these teachings to make them accessible and more relevant to Western disciples, presenting both the Christ and Patanjali as archetypes of perfected soul expression. He presents the Christ as a soul fully embodied in manifestation, while Patanjali's role was to codify the ancient oral traditions into the sutras, which later became foundational for the Trans-Himalayan school, on which modern theosophy is based. So, first of all, for those of you new to my webinars, welcome. I invite thoughts and comments, questions and comments, provided that they are relevant to the material that we're studying at the time. But dialogue is always more interesting than monologue. So yeah, feel free to raise your hand whenever you want some clarification or you have a comment to make. The panel on the left is the table of contents. This is true in all my webinar series. With where we presently are in dark blue. So will be an introductory remarks for this entire webinar. On the right is the actual page from Light of the Soul from which we are reading. I actually go through and photograph the pages of my book and then put that photo here on the right. So you can see the original. And then in the middle is that same text, but in a more readable size and font. And this is where, if you're asked to read, you will be working from is this middle column. So without further ado, let's begin. The book starts with an old commentary from HPB's The Voice of the Silence. So yeah, let's if we could get a reader, please.
Ben, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Before the soul can see, the harmony within must be attained, and fleshly eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. Before the soul can hear, the image, man, has to become as deaf to roarings as to whispers, to cries or bellowing elephants as to the silvery buzzing of the golden firefly. Before the soul can comprehend and may remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind. For then the soul will hear and will remember, and then to the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence.
Thank you, Ben. Okay, first, you know, we could spend easily this whole webinar just in a deep contemplation and analysis of this whole commentary. So I've chosen a path somewhere between so we can get the main thrust of what is said here, but not go too far into the weeds. Okay, so first, before the soul can see, the harmony within must be attained and fleshly eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. So harmony is achieved through inner alignment with the soul, which always precedes true spiritual perception. The seeing of the soul is what DK calls divine vision, which opens the seer to the clear light of truth beyond the illusion of lower mind. Next, before the soul can hear, the image, man, has to become as deaf to roarings as to whispers, to cries of bellowing elephants, as to the silvery buzzing of the golden firefly. So, of course, this isn't literal deafness and blindness, but rather the ability to become divinely indifferent to the implications connected with the sounds and sights on the physical plane. And indifference that comes through knowing that the lower senses are nothing more than portals into an illusory world. This realization is necessary before one is able to register the subtle realities of the higher planes without distortion. For as long as you have an orientation towards the fruit that comes from the senses of the physical plane reality, it acts as a veil for perceiving the higher realities. Next. Wait a minute. Oh yeah, could we get a reader for this? This is just a description of the sense on the Buddhic plane. And I see a hand.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Thea.
If you could go back to the previous screen. I think also when he's talking here, he's also talking about the shifting of the rays of attribute to the first three rays, because he's talking about going from vision, hearing, and then he talks about form. So one, two, and three, there has to be a certain level of synthetic synthesis that occurs before you can start really seeing with the soul and utilizing those, the higher CDs as they're called.
Right. Yes, thank you for that, Tia. I think that's accurate. Anyone else?
Can you read that passage, please, Tia?
On the Buddhic plane, hearing, now of the synthetic quality called telepathy, demonstrates its complete comprehension, for it has involved two things. One, a knowledge and recognition of individual sound. Two, a similar knowledge of group sound in their complete unification. This causes the most perfect comprehension and is the secret of the master's power.
Thank you, dear. Okay. Next. Before the soul can comprehend and may remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind. Okay, so comprehension here references the upward striving human soul's ability to directly grasp reality. It's beyond simple understanding of the context or whatever. It's a penetration into the realm of truth. Remembrance refers to that soul's ability to retain and recall the eternal truths. The she, interesting, you don't often see this pronoun. The she is the human soul who must align with the still small voice of the soul on its own plane, the silent speaker, before it can comprehend and remember the higher realities, which include its own true nature. The analogy, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind. It's a very subtle analogy. Here, the clay is the upward striving human soul who only takes on its true form, the clay, when united with the potter's mind, the potter being the silent speaker. Okay? Okay, and then finally, for then the soul will hear and will remember, and then to the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence. So when alignment with the higher self is achieved, then the ability to hear, meaning comprehend, and remember, meaning shed the veils of forgetfulness that characterize incarnated life, allow one to hear the voice of the silence, which is uttered from the soul on its own plane. Later in the book, DK talks a lot about the challenge of bringing realization back into brain consciousness, that it's achieved while in meditation or through some extraordinary event, which would include initiation, but then to bring what occurred, the memory of what occurred, back into brain consciousness presents quite a challenge. And that's something that is tackled, that difficulty. Any thoughts or questions so far on anything? I see a hand.
Yeah. Helioso, please go ahead.
It's a quick question. So who is the silent speaker? Or what it is?
The silent speaker is the solar angel. And this is the reason it's silent, is because it has to be perceived on its own plane rather than on the planes of the lower quaternary, where sound reverberates, you know, through the air and is perceived by the physical ears. But so it's the voice of the silence is the voice of the soul, which is the voice of the solar angel, which resonates through the higher subplanes of the mental plane to be picked up by the mental body and translated to the brain consciousness of the disciple.
Well, that's great explanation. It also seems to me that there is the relevance between soul and solar angel. Some equation there? Is it some relation? Is it soul coming from or related to solar angel? Quickly, if you.
Yeah, sure. So the solar angel is this great being on its own plane who is at the level, DK tells us, of a master of wisdom. It says, the first master that you will come in contact with is your own soul. Then there's that soul in projection through the causal body on the higher three subplanes of the mental plane. And that's the meeting place, you could say the form aspect of the soul, in its relationship to the incarnated personality. And so through the building of the causal body, the unfolding of the petals of the causal body, one comes into gradual soul awareness, which is awareness of the actual solar angel, until when all the petals of the egoic lotus are opened, then the causal body is shattered, and one is translated, is the word DK uses, to the lower subplanes of the Buddhic plane, and assumes this the work and the position that the solar angel provided for that incarnated personality, and then sets up another relationship with the monad. That begins the second half of the long journey home.
Thank you
Okay.
very much.
You're very welcome. Okay, next question.
Carol, please go ahead.
Hi, it's still I just heard that and I'm still a little confused. So the solar angel is helping us on this progress once the last petals are open and moving towards the monad. Would that be the correct way to say it?
Oh, it's helping us during the entire journey, though we're
Okay.
not aware of its help. Literally, the spark of mind, which is the ability to think, is made possible through the individualization, which happened back in Lemurian times, at least for a certain segment, right? So from that point on, there is soul involvement. However, until the personality responds directly to the soul does what it does on its own plane, and it's not directly involved with the personality. And then once you get up into the fifth opening of the fifth petal, where there's serious attempts at soul contact, that lifetime, the soul turns its attention to the incarnated personality and devotes itself to the bringing to giving that which is needed in order to bridge the gap, to stimulate the personality's efforts to bridge that gap.
And so the solar angel is helping the whole process. Otherwise, it wouldn't
Yes, it
work.
is, but like I said, there's a very long period of time, like 99%
It
maybe
kicks
of the
in.
time, where it's not directly involved.
Yeah, it
But
kicks in more then, but
it
it
kicks in the
makes
later
sense.
stages, and in the initial stages are
Does
is
is there
huh?
Is there a point that it leaves, like, or it doesn't keep
Yes.
going? Once you have joined
Fourth
with the
initiation.
Mona, fourth initiation.
Fourth initiation, you assume, you could say, the office. You assume the influence. You become in your consciousness what that soul was representing for you. And then you establish a relationship with the monad, and that becomes your next goal.
Okay, and then the solar angel, does it leave or?
Yeah, it's freed. Yeah, to go about its own business.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay.
And we got another hand.
Go ahead, Joe.
We're not going to get very far with this. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm inferring that we're speaking about at least three different levels of awareness of the soul, and that each one of those requires a purification. And that even when one begins to or approaches hearing the voice of the silence, one must purify even more.
Yes. Yeah, your statement is correct. And it comes through, the idea of Maya, glamour, and illusion being associated with, first of all, the physical, then the astral plane, the glamour, and then illusion of the mental plane. Those are all, you could say, working through that are forms of purification. The real big one is this, preparing for the second initiation, which I would guess that, many, many of the people here today are doing just that. Whether or not you've taken the first initiation, you're doing the work of purifying your astral body, right? Even if you've yet to take the first initiation, it doesn't happen in neat little segments. We're doing the work, even preparing for the third in it a little bit, working with illusion, even as we're mostly preparing for the second. But yeah, those are the forms of purification that we undergo in order to have an experience at the next level of soul. And it's not until the fourth initiation that we have a full-on experience of the, well, there could be, it could be at the actual third initiation, an experience of the soul on its own plane, but in terms of the soul influence between initiations, you're not freed of the lower quaternary and therefore of the form aspect until the fourth initiation. Okay, more questions or ideas.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, you have two.
Yeah,
No.
I can let Ariane, you can go ahead and I'll wait.
Thank
Okay,
you.
Ariane.
Thank you to you. So this is really something that's come up today for me, and it's quite confusing. I hope you can help and answer it. So the soul is sort of perfect on its own plane, and it sets out these different personalities or incarnations over lifetimes. So why not just leave the soul as it is? I mean, it's almost like, is this process in which we have multiple lifetimes in which the soul comes into material form, and then we go through initiations until the fourth initiation, when the soul is either shattered or replaced. It doesn't become a driving
Right.
or a body of energy that sort of holds all the lifetimes understanding together, that it's incorporated into the personality who's now fully soul infused, like a master of wisdom at the fifth initiation. And that is a personality, that being over, hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, I suppose, has acquired unique qualities and sanskaras and all that. But what is it all about? I mean, and basically every time we incarnate, we're bringing consciousness to some of the atoms that we
Well, you're answering your own question. That's it. It's to lift the lower lives, the lesser lives, that two on two levels that make up our own forms, which include the physical, astral, and mental sheaths, as well as the lower kingdoms in nature, where humanity is seen as the place between, the midway point. And you could see this, for instance, just in the fact that animal man, which is the height, the upper levels of the animal kingdom, by being overshadowed and given individualization, provide a pathway for the entire lower kingdoms, because they make their way up to that point and then they enter the human kingdom. And by entering the human, they then have the opportunity to progress through all the higher kingdoms as well. So That's why, if we don't incarnate, we don't provide the quickening to the form aspect that allows them to progress as well. So it's a sacrificial act by the entire human kingdom. And of course, you're not individually aware of that.
Yeah,
It's not very high in on your process of on your return journey that you become literally aware of the energetics involved in lifting the lower kingdoms, but nonetheless it takes place. By all of us, anybody who incarnates is lifting the lesser lives.
and at the same time, that's like a very beneficent, harmonious explanation, but the experience of awakening is there's literally a war going on internally to master these lower lives that would like to have supremacy over one, like in the the physical and emotional body. So I the fact that most people don't even know that this is an aspect of the reason that we're all here in like human form, this it just seems so it just seems so such a waste of time, so sad, And then for us who know, the war is on, basically. I mean, just to get, to gain ascendancy, some part, higher part of us, the lower lives may want to ascend and evolve, but they're also in conflict with our evolutionary aspirations, are they not?
And seemingly, they're lunar beings, lunar petries, and they seem energetically they're involutional. They're still working out the form aspect. But from another point of view, it's all evolutionary, right? So starting at the very minute of the beginning of the globe, when the first root race is sent forward, projected into matter, and it's not anything like the matter that we have now. It's not dense matter. From that minute onward, the goal finally is reunion with the monad. But at that point in time, the parabola goes deep into the form aspect in order to shed light to those sixth and seventh hierarchies that make up the Devic kingdom, the lunar petries that are the form aspect that with their own bodies make up the form, because they too must be lifted. We were there once. We were lifted in previous times. And in a time in the future, when we're fully identified with the monad, we'll be doing that work at on another octave. Tia.
If you could go to the previous page, I'm always at the previous page.
Sure.
Interestingly enough, and I think you opened this up talking about the co-authorship between Alice Bailey and DK in writing this book. And I just wanted to draw your attention to, so in the left side of the page, you have this objective sort of table of contents for the book, objectively speaking. And then right next to it here, you have the subjective explanation of the book. As you move from this whole notion of polarity into synthesis, into a synthetic approach, and it says, so for then the soul will hear and will remember. That's the first ray aspect, the monad. When it becomes the conscious connection, the third initiation. And then the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence. The inner ear is intuition. And so at that point, you have become, you have learned or you have done the exercises to project your, keep your consciousness in the intuitive plane. Well, that's firmly in the intuitive plane at the fourth initiation, but you're having glimpses of it
Yeah.
at the third initiation. So it's just if you just juxtapose the two, you have for to exercise the intuition, the same thing that's written on the left and the right. That's what I was gonna say.
Wow, that's quite an insight. Right. It's a true summation, you know. Thanks for that analysis. It's quite interesting. Anyone else? Okay.
We have a comment from Rose. She says, like physical life, where we have to work hard to learn, so it is regarding soul awareness.
Yes, exactly. You know, the infant becoming an adult in one lifetime is a kind of microcosm of the entire process, you know. Of course, that's involves, you know, there are many different types of childhoods and adult levels, you know, so it's all relative. But, you know, even when one is what's called an average human being, the process of moving from childhood to adult is a kind of microcosm of the entire process. All right, let's move on into Alice Bailey's introductory remarks. Can we get a reader, please?
Yes. Barbara, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Introductory remarks. The science of Raja Yoga, or the kingly science of the soul, as laid down by its main exponent, Patanjali, will eventually find its greatest demonstration in the West. This is owing to the fact that, under cyclic law, the fifth root race, in its fifth sub-race, must inevitably reach its highest point. That point in the economy of the races is seen exemplified in the right use of the mind and its utilization by the soul for the achievement of group objectives and the development of group consciousness upon the physical plane. Hitherto, the mind has either been prostituted to material ends or has been deified. Through the science of Raja Yoga, the mind will be known as the instrument of the soul and the means whereby the brain of the aspirant becomes illuminated and knowledge gained of those matters which concern the realm of the soul.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, first, the science of Raja Yoga, or the kingly science of the soul, as laid down by its main exponent, Patanjali, will eventually find its greatest demonstration in the West. This is owing to the fact that, under cyclic law, the fifth root race in its fifth sub-race must inevitably touch its highest point. So, Raja Yoga is called the royal path because it is considered to be the highest, most comprehensive form of yoga, at least that has come to us so far. In the next root race, there may be a higher form, but for this fifth root race, this is the highest form of yoga that has been given us. And that's because it covers the mind and leads to union with the soul. Patanjali is revered as the father of yoga because he transformed diverse oral traditions into a systematic science. Raja Yoga will find its greatest demonstration in the West because, as DK tells us, the West is the locus of the fifth sub-race, whose purpose is mastery of the mind. During the fifth sub-race of the fifth root race, humanity will more fully unfold the powers of the lower mind and thus preparing the ground for reception of higher mind impressions, which will become the norm among disciples during the sixth root race. Even during the sixth sub-race of this race, of this fifth root race, there will be a great penetration into higher mind. Okay, next.
We have
Yeah.
a couple of comments.
Go ahead.
Ariane says, can you contrast Raja Yoga with Jnana Yoga?
Jnana, yeah, Jnana Yoga is
Jnana.
science of, well, Raja Yoga includes all the lower yogas, including Hatha and Bhakti and Jnana Yoga. In other words, the gains made in those lesser yogas have to also be made in Raja Yoga, but there is the higher purpose of beyond perfected mind to soul union in Raja Yoga. So it's a synthetic yoga in that sense. Let's see, what about Agni Yoga? I'm looking at the other one from Santana. What about Agni Yoga, the yoga of
Fire and synthesis. That's the one that's supposed to be for the sixth root race.
well, this is yeah. I can't speak with a lot of authority about Agni Yoga. It is the yoga of fire. It probably it has to do with raising the Kundalini. That's my guess on its orientation. But I'm not that versed in the nature of it. And then there's Agni Yoga, which Jose Becerra writes is the second representation of, I guess that means Agni Yoga. Okay, thanks for
Can I
your.
make a comment though?
Yes.
Yeah, just about Jnana Yoga. It's really about the pursuit of higher states of consciousness, that the content of what not only one's mind, but everything that one perceives is secondary to awareness. And so Advaita Vedanta is the pursuit of Jnana Yoga. What I'm hearing today in this passage is that the Raja Yoga is this pursuit of the soul, this union with the soul, and yoga is union. When I spoke to you earlier, I was talking about the kind of meditation I do, and it's called Laya Yoga, which is the yoga of the chakras.
Right.
So they're different yogas, but it's hard to imagine that union with the soul would be the highest, because we know there's higher things than the soul, even as we speak, when we're reading this information. And when I study with people who are yonis, which I do, their ability to talk about, and it's a very intellectual pursuit, like often when people study esoteric works, but the amazing thing for the people, the small number of Indians, the East Indians who do practice and study the Upanishads, they have a leg up on us. They live these ideas from the time that they start studying them over probably lifetimes, but the way they're practicing with the diligence in pursuit of something that's higher than the mind is, it's definitely Jnana Yoga is not about the mind. It's about understanding that one is even beyond the observer or the one who is awake, that one is one with the Atman. And so it's really, for me, it's something that I'm just, because I've been studying the different yogas over decades, it feels very noble. And when you describe Raja Yoga here, it feels like it's just again a stepping stone.
Yeah, and first of all, I defer to your knowledge of these particular paths of yoga. My reference is strictly within the DK material, so I don't have a background in Hindu yogic philosophy as such. So I welcome any corrections along the way in that way. But I agree with you about Jnana Yoga. It's also going to embrace higher mind, which takes you into the levels of reality. But I can't speak to it with any great knowledge, these different types of yoga, I'm afraid. And the other thing I'll say is, you were saying that this is just one step along the way, and that there has to be higher yogas. And I agree that in we've been given five at this point, and there will be a sixth and a seventh that will certainly be, for instance, the yoga of the monad will certainly be finally one of the yogas, that specific techniques that move you from soul consciousness to monadic consciousness. But yeah, I don't want to go too far into the weeds of specific Hindu yogic philosophy, though, anytime it can enlighten our conversation, that's fine. I see another hand.
Joe, go ahead.
There it is. I came to Moria Federation about 10 years ago, and very clearly at that point was aware of a mystical background. And I determined to start from the beginning on this process to combine the occult with the mystical. And I surely see that with the comment that Tia made between the introductory as being more like the occult for me, and then the introductory in the center becomes the kind of mystical. And I formed an impression probably about 6 or 7 years ago that if DK really is pleading with us to get to the point where we can do the yoga of synthesis. And I'll stop there. But one more thought. It says if this material, this book, is intended to take us as clearly as possible to the next step, and it may well be in DK's material on the intuition and the what am I thinking?
Telepathy and the etheric vehicle.
Yeah, telepathy and the etheric vehicle, my son tells me. Okay.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Okay, I've just read the comments, and I see more hands.
Yeah, the comments are coming in faster than I can read. Let me
So,
see.
yeah, we'll just go with, don't worry about the comments. Let's just go with the hands at this point.
Okay. Louise, go ahead.
Hiya, and again, Francis and everyone here, thanks so much for this wonderful webinar. Just to say that, I find in many ways that this book is a kind of a roadmap to future humanity's higher psychic functioning, right? So we are moving. Ooh, apologies if there's some static in the background, but we're
Yeah, we
certainly
got some
moving where
feedback.
the. Ooh, sorry, I'm not sure why that is, but we're certainly moving to a place where at some point, maybe in 500 years, we can consciously induce, once our purpose in life is fulfilled, exiting the body, right? We're not having to go through the whole death's dissolution sequence, and or criminality becomes non-existent. Why? Because we become our brother's keeper. We can instantly see that deception on the auric fields of our neighbors and our family. It would be pointless, this whole exercise of deception and the whole pretense to the world, and the way we subscribe to it, and government collapses, right? We're now into a new age where we can achieve greater levels of peace and prosperity and love and make the most of this wonderful experience for while it lasts, right? So this is a kind of a roadmap into that, but I just wanted to say one thing. That even though this is kind of formulaic, you know, if you do these kind of processes, if you do these prayers, etc., you know, at any given moment, this divine revelation can happen. And I just draw reference to a friend, a colleague who was following her son's suicide death. She had a full-blown Kundalini awakening. So imagine the emotions of having, you know, the grief of dealing with your son's passing, and now you're seeing him with full-blown clairvoyance, you know, higher psychic functioning, and having to now your whole life world and how you make sense of it completely changed, right? And I can draw another reference, a lovely lady who lives in New Rochelle, New York. She moved in very high circles. Her husband was a UN ambassador, a representative. She was a film producer. So she was just a, you know, perhaps a mom with three kids moving in, you know, very posh circles. And next thing you know, as a part of doing a documentary on holistic health and spiritual healing, full-blown clairvoyance. And now she's seeing her spiritual mentors. And maybe as far as 10 years ago, she helped solve the case of a missing person for more than 10 years, where she directed people to find his remains in a, you know, in within a plot of 15 acres or, you know, 100 acres or something like that, you know, using her guidance. In many ways, I just want to say that this can happen today, tomorrow, to all of us. So it's worthy, you know, and the reason why I mention that, because every time it seems, even within esoteric circles, I mention the higher psychic faculties, there's this kind of knee-jerk reaction amongst esotericists that immediately talk about lower psychism, right? And I'm just trying to say, or they'll say something along, you know, that's not for this incarnation. I'll be tons of incarnations away. Let's not make the ego's job that much harder than it already is with psychic disentanglement by saying this. It'll be 5 years, or having a mindset that's just because I'm not practicing this. I don't live in the Himalayan mountains. I don't do this. I don't do that. Tomorrow, this next minute, that divine revelation can hit us hard. And it helps if we have an understanding of what that can look like via this book in particular, right? Imagine ourselves being higher functioning. But I'd much rather go the easy route, listening to the soul, than have a near-death experience or have to go through some, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. Thank you so much, Francis, and everyone.
It's very interesting comments. I would say that those type of revelatory happenings, and if we were to do a poll, and we're not going to do that, it would be too much fun, right? You'd find that lots of people in this group, the 73 people who are here today, would have had extraordinary experiences during this life that would point to at least a temporary opening. And so, yes, it's part and parcel with the path of becoming. I see another hand.
Elisa, please go ahead.
Well, I'm just quickly. I'm in the. Will be a little bit echoing Louis. Would you just brought the idea of let's just go through it, let's just go see what happens, how our souls will receive it and unfold. And from the point of view, it's the science of Raja Yoga. Is the kingly science of the soul, but who are the kings? The Rajas, right? In the Vedic culture, in the ancient culture, the kings were in a statue of Rajas, its spiritual statue and the social statue. So the science of the soul on that level came from Vedic world, and decay gave us the version of it for Westerners to tap into it and to familiarize on a mind level, and maybe even touched our souls. And we are And one of our master himself, I believe, the one that Raj, and we know all who we might have been meaning by that, talking about that, but that wonderful illuminated master. So we are in the same river, in the same stream. I shouldn't make dichotomy or shouldn't make it comparison. Let's just go through it and see how the soul will receive everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. Tia.
Just a quick comment. I was not making a juxtaposition between occultism and mysticism in the two paragraphs. I was making a juxtaposition between objective versus subjective, because I think that, and I won't go further on that and develop it, but it had the end of the first paragraph, or the
Commentary.
yeah, is very much a third initiation. And then the last topic that we have in this table is isolated unity, which is identification. And so what I was just doing was saying, one is on one side you have the objective using the dichotomy of polarity, right, which is objective. And then you have, when he's going through the subjective language, a unity or an intuitive bent, which is subjective. So that's the difference, objective versus subjective, not occult, because the commentary is definitely occult.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for the clarification. Okay. Moving on.
Hold on. There were a lot of comments, but I would like to read what Sri Yantra Shanti says. She just gave a little. Can
Let
you
me,
hear me?
I can hear you, but what I want to do is I want to scan the comments myself because, we have to balance forward motion with this conversation. And I'm just looking through, like for instance, I recommend everybody read, Sri Yantra Shanti's description, but I don't think we have to read it and talk about it. Okay. And I see other sort of comments that agree with what's been said. So, yeah, we're going to have to. I think it's because, we have a pretty good size group here. So we have to keep it moving. And I think maybe the line we draw is with the comments. If you find, I'll keep in touch with the comments and choose whether or not to read those. Otherwise, we'll just keep it to raised hands. Okay, BL. Okay. next up, that point in the economy of the races is seen exemplified in the right use of the mind and its utilization by the soul for the achievement of group objectives and the development of group consciousness upon the physical plane. So that point in the economy of races, he just was talking about the fifth root race and the fifth sub race, right? Which must inevitably touch its highest point. And it's that point that he's talking about here. Okay, so economy of the races refers to the overall plan where each race is destined to develop certain principles. Okay. The destiny of our fifth root race is to develop the right use of the mind, which means that the soul, mind, brain line of descent becomes an instrument of the soul for group objectives. That's the purpose of this root race. Next, hitherto the mind has either been prostituted to material ends or has been deified. So, for most of humanity, the mind is an instrument for personality use, hence the idea of prostituted to material ends, and is deified, meaning seen as our highest possible expression. For instance, modern science has deified the mind because at least traditional modern science sees nothing beyond mind. And then finally, through the science of Raja Yoga, the mind will be known as the instrument of the soul and the means whereby the brain of the aspirant becomes illuminated and knowledge gained of those matters which concern the realm of the soul. Keyword here is science. Raja Yoga is not a mystical approach, but rather a step, except insofar as that mysticism is incorporated in occultism. But it is rather a step-by-step series of techniques for energy transmission from the soul to the brain, resulting in the ability to perceive through the illuminated mind knowledge relevant to the realm of the soul. That's the purpose. Okay, let me take a look at that. Just looking over your thoughts. Yes, thank you, Tia. You know, Ariane makes a comment about bhakti yoga, the higher aspects of bhakti yoga. And on Kriya Yoga, which was used by Yogananda. So thank you all. Yeah, I recommend you all keep in touch with the chat. There's some illuminating material there. And I won't necessarily get to all of it. Okay, next. Wait a minute here. Okay, I see a hand.
Francis, go ahead. Francis?
Francis Harriman, do you have your hand raised?
Can you not hear me?
I can hear you, and I thought you were going to do the unmuting. I've just unmuted myself. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. The science...
Go ahead.
We're on a different page here.
Oh, do you need a previous page or something?
I thought we were at the under the law of evolution. No.
Oh, that's next. We're not there yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were looking for a reader.
Well, yes, we are, and please do.
Okay. Under the law of evolution, likewise, the mind being the fifth principle, the fifth root race must be intimately concerned with it, and its corresponding fifth subrace more intimately than any other. Students would do well to bear in mind the following correspondences. 1, the fifth root race, the Aryan. 2, the fifth subrace, Anglo-Saxon. 3, the fifth principle, Manas or mind. 4, the fifth plane, the mental. 5, the fifth ray, concrete knowledge. All the various yogas have had their place in the unfoldment of the human being. In the first purely physical race, which is called the Lemurian, the yoga at that time imposed upon infant humanity was Hatha Yoga, the yoga of the physical body. That yoga which brings into conscious use and manipulation the various organs, muscles, and parts of the physical frame.
Thank you. Okay, first, under the law of evolution, likewise, the mind being the fifth principle, the fifth root race must be intimately concerned with it, and its corresponding fifth subrace more intimately than any other subrace. And then he lists the groups of five, you know, which you can just see on your screen. So this passage is all about the science of numerical resonance, which we tend to underrate. It's always relevant when you see the same number defining two different qualities, or you know, for instance, a plane and a subrace, two different realities. But the number is always a energetically links those disparate ideas, right? So the energy of fiveness demonstrates as the power to initiate concretion, right? The ray of concrete knowledge or science, to embody form building ideas through the use of the creative mind. It is the force that produces individualization in Leo, the fifth zodiacal sign, allowing a person to know him or herself as a distinct entity before eventually moving towards synthesis. The fifth, or Aryan root race, gives us the realm of human endeavor. The fifth, or Anglo-Saxon subrace, gives us the specific era. Manas, the fifth principle, provides the method of achieving the goal of soul union, which, again, going backwards, characterizes the fifth root race and the fifth subrace. The fifth, or mental plane, gives us the field of endeavor, and the fifth ray is the source and force of intelligent concretion that defines the fiveness and all the above, the mental plane, the Aryan root race, and the development of the human mind. See, I end.
Nisa, go ahead.
Just so for clarification then, the hierarchy then is by definition through this, they're totally soul infused, and that's the fifth kingdom, yes?
Right. The fifth is the hierarchy is made up of largely of fifth kingdom beings. So there's a strong crossover there, yes. But it's also characterized by the number five. And you have to realize that that soul is the son of mind, right? Which expresses itself through both love and wisdom. And that's the nature of the hierarchy itself, you know, masters of higher mind in terms of their expression. So yes, you could definitely put that in here as being numerically related to these other qualities.
Would you say Raja Yoga is the path to the fifth kingdom then?
Yes. You know, since it's the kingly science of the soul, then another way of saying that is the path to the fifth kingdom. And that's what this book is, by the way. You know, well, hopefully we'll all make it just by reading this book. You know, it's a very special book in that it's, in a way you could say that the information presented is secondary to the potential available through that information, if you understand what I mean. You know, we can read about the you know, the change and the rounds and the globes, etc., in a treatise on cosmic fire and how the Kundalini raises and all the other fabulous information that's there, without being consciously engaged in the material as process, right? But this material is very oriented towards the process of becoming. And so, you know, you can take these webinar series as a a means of your own personal growth, of choosing to follow the teachings given here as the way by which you choose to follow the path of becoming. It's up to you how you want to interface this material. Okay, next up, all the various yogas have had their place in the unfoldment of the human being. In the first purely physical race, which is called the Lemurian, the yoga at the time imposed upon infant humanity was Hatha Yoga, the yoga of the physical body. That yoga which brings into conscious use and manipulation the various organs, muscles, and parts of the physical frame. So the evolving before mentioned economy of the races can be traced through the type of yoga practiced during each root race. In Lemuria, a disciple could reach as high as the third initiation, but at that time, the third initiation represented the perfection of the physical instrument only, not soul alignment of the entire personality as it does today. Okay, next. Could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Marianne, can you read that for us, please?
Yes, thank you. The problem before the adepts of that time was to teach human beings, who were then little more than animals, the purpose, significance, and use of the various organs, so that they could consciously control them and the meaning of the symbol of the human figure. Therefore, in those early days, through the practice of Hatha Yoga, the human being reached the portal of initiation. At that time, the attainment of the third initiation, resulting in the transfiguration of the personality, was the highest initiation that man was capable of achieving. In Atlantean days, the progress of the sons of men was procured through the imposition of two yogas. First, the yoga which is called by the name of Laya Yoga, the yoga of the centers, which produced a stabilizing of the etheric body and of the centers in man and the development of the astral and psychic nature.
Thank you, Ariane. Okay, so first, the problem before the adepts of that time was to teach human beings, who were then little more than animals, the purpose, significance, and use of their various organs so that they could consciously control them, and the meaning of the symbol of the human figure. Excuse me. So, Lemurian human beings were barely individualized from the animal kingdom. They functioned in their physical bodies, but their mental and emotional sheaths were almost completely quiescent. The quote, unquote, problem before the adepts was how to spark self-awareness in these barely individualized human beings. They chose Hatha Yoga in order to shift awareness from the realm of instinct, animal instinct, to one of conscious volition. It's really something that's almost impossible for us to even imagine what the state, the gains that could be effectively made at this stage. To this end, the adepts taught early humanity that the physical form was not reality itself, but was rather a symbol of a higher spiritual reality. Lacking developed mental understanding, the Lemurians perceived the inner man not as an abstract idea, but as the inner power that governs the body. It's a subtle distinction. We are now so mentally oriented that it's quite difficult for us to imagine Lemurian consciousness. Next. Therefore, in those early days, through the practice of Hatha Yoga, the human beings reached the portal of initiation. At that time, the attainment of the third initiation, resulting in the transfiguration of the personality, was the highest initiation that man was capable of achieving. In other writings, DK tells us that the nature of initiations changes as humanity progresses through the root race. Nonetheless, since the second and third initiations are defined by the transformation of the astral and mental bodies, achieving these initiations during the Lemurian period, when those bodies were undeveloped, is truly difficult to imagine. Did the few who took these initiations first develop mental and astral bodies under the stimulation of their teachers? It seems like it would have to have been so if they were to master them. But DK, in other teachings, he tells us that the level achieved at, for instance, the third initiation then and now is radically at different levels, that the consciousness that is achieved at a third initiation in the fifth root race is far, far beyond that which was achieved in Lemurian times. But just what was achieved then, we can't really know. But Tia's going to tell us.
No, I have a question. This is interesting because if the third initiation is the highest attainment that you could attain in the human kingdom, then you became a part of the fifth kingdom at the third initiation after taking the third initiation. And so, if you just go ahead deduction, does that mean that the Christ became a master at the third initiation because he came through the earth,
right,
evolution,
right, and he was the first of those who were individualized in Lemuria. He was the first of those to take the third initiation. So, well, your questions are good, but I don't really have answers, you know.
That would be interesting because that would mean that the bar for us is much higher for mastership than would have been for, you know.
I think it was. Yeah. I think you became a master as a third initiate. There were those from the moon chain, such as the Buddha, who took initiation during the moon chain, and so entered the Lemurian as initiates already. They would certainly be at a whole different level than those who were individualized in Lemuria, obviously, right? They would literally be using Lemurian bodies probably for the purpose of serving that race in incarnation, you know, those initiatives.
But we recognize the Christ as a spiritual genius, right? So yeah. For him, but he didn't come through the moon chain, he comes through earth.
That's right.
Pain. So that's why I say it's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
That's all I'm going to say. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, there's an interesting little, dot, dot, dot to that teaching about the Christ, which is that DK says, there are those now who are moving as fast as he did, but he was the first to do so. So that's a kind of, you know, asterisk on that, you know, that there are other, what you might call spiritual geniuses that have come since the Christ time. They just didn't come out of the gate with, so much forward momentum. I see a hand.
Hi,
Yes.
Francis. The initiation, I think, did I understand correctly that it was stated that the third initiation is the highest?
Yes.
Is it not the fourth?
Not then. No, oh, now the fourth initiation will free you from your causal body. But at that time, the highest possible initiation was the third. We're told.
Understood. I thought, thank you for that clarification. I thought for a moment we were saying that today the highest possible initiation is the third, when I believed it was the fourth, right? So this is when the monad itself, the causal body, is destroyed and the spiritual man is in full possession
Right,
of his instrument, right? So
that's
this is, I think this is more akin to what the Master Jesus was able to achieve on that level.
well.
Or am I mistaken? I don't see the I don't necessarily see the soul infusion stage, however wonderful that achievement is being in the same level in terms of the release of spiritual power, the spiritual man coming into its own, as when the monad takes full possession.
Oh, of course.
And the whole point of initiation four, as I understand it, it's that soul infused personality that's now in a position to make that initiate the fourth initiation possible, right? It's that soul infused personality that is now able to magnetize that a process of becoming. So for me, when we reference Jesus, I can't help but think, at the very minimum, we're talking a stage four on if that was to happen again, or do I have a wrong understanding? And please, I welcome any insight and correctiveness. Thank you.
Okay, start at the beginning here. It says here where my cursor is. At that time, the attainment of the third initiation, resulting in the transfiguration, was the highest initiation that man was capable of achieving. So, first of all, that means that you couldn't yet shatter the causal body. It doesn't mean that you shattered the causal body earlier, that no one they came up to Lemurian, excuse me, they came up to the Lemurian root race, could transcend the causal body. The third was the highest. Of course, that's quite high, but as I just mentioned, it was at a very much lower level than the third initiation is now. And then your description of the fourth initiation was correct. As to Jesus, he took the fourth initiation actually, in truth, while on the cross. And that coincided with the Christ taking the sixth initiation, right? He recapitulated the transfiguration, the third initiation, with John. I seem to remember they were on the road going somewhere, and that they, yeah, that was a recapitulation because Jesus came into that lifetime as a third initiate. So there's a few separate points there that were being made. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Much love. Thank you.
Okay, let me find my place here. Okay. So finally, in Atlantean days, the progress of the sons of men was procured through the imposition of two yogas. First, the yoga which is called the name of Laya yoga, or Laya, the yoga of the centers, which produced a stabilizing of the etheric body and of the centers in man, and the development of the astral and psychic nature. So the psychic sensitivity and etheric stability of humanity were not inherent developments, but rather were brought about through Laya Loga, which was introduced by the hierarchy during the early stages of the Atlantean era. Today, Laya Loga or Laya Yoga still focuses on the chakras, and it's an entirely different discipline than it, the purpose of the discipline now would be entirely different than it was in early Atlantean times, because the purpose then was to stabilize the emotional and etheric bodies, right? Now it's a study of the centers, but I have to say it's only considered safe when pursued under the strict guidance of a master. And after an aspirant has purified their nature through the first stages of Raja Yoga. Okay. Next up, could we get a reader, please?
God, can you read that for us, please?
Did you say Scott?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's hard to hear you, at least for me.
Yeah, your voice is doing last stages of being sick kind of sounds.
Okay.
Go ahead, Scott.
Later on, bhakti yoga, growing out of the development of the emotional or astral body, was incorporated with Laya Yoga, and the foundation of that mysticism and devotion, which has been the underlying incentive during our particular Aryan root race, was laid. The fourth initiation was at that time the objective. The subject of these great initiations has been discussed more at length in my previous volume, Initiation, Human and Solar. Now in the Aryan race, the subjugation of the mental body and the control of the mind is brought about through the practice of Raja Yoga. And the fifth initiation, that of adept, is the goal for evolving humanity. Thus, all the yogas have had their place and served a useful purpose. And it will become apparent that any return to Hatha Yoga practice or those practices which deal specifically with the development of the centers brought about through various types of meditation practices and breathing exercises is, from a certain aspect, a retrogression.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, first, later on, bhakti yoga, growing out of the development of the emotional or astral body, was incorporated with Laya Yoga, and the foundation of that mysticism and devotion, which has been the underlying incentive during our particular Aryan root race, was laid. So, just as Hatha Yoga introduced to the physical body, oriented Lemurian, physical body oriented Lemurian, Bhakti Yoga was the method imposed by the hierarchy to bring the newly developed emotional nature under control. We might hypothesize that this imposition helped align the chakras of the newly developed emotional sheath into alignment with the etheric body. The phrase, the foundation of that mysticism and devotion, which has been the underlying incentive during our particular Aryan root race, was laid, suggests that though the Aryan root race is technically the race of mind, its originating incentive, as shown by the nature of many of its religions, has historically been mystical and devotional. In fact, humanity is only now transitioning from Atlantean emotional polarity to the mental polarity that will eventually characterize the Aryan race. And, you know, again, I have to emphasize that the Laya and Bhakti Yoga of the Atlantean times would be vastly different than how those yogas are practiced today. They're both still extant. So, Next, the fourth initiation was at that time the objective. The subject of these great initiations has been discussed more at length in my previous volume, Initiation, Human, and Solar. So again, we can only speculate as to how it could have been possible for someone to take the fourth initiation during a time when the mental body remained undeveloped, right? I have to go with the idea that there were just a very few initiates that reached the stage, and for them, they did develop an astral and mental sheath. Because you couldn't take the third or fourth initiation with an undeveloped mental body. Nonetheless, the fourth initiation of that time was much less evolved than that same initiation during the this fifth root race. As with the Lemurians, we can only assume that the mental bodies of a select few were stimulated in such a way that they could eventually triumph over the lower quaternary. These were probably the same few that took the third initiation during the time of the Christ. Next. Now in the Aryan race, the subjugation of the mental body and the control of the mind is brought about through the practice of Raja Yoga. And the fifth initiation, that of the adept, is the goal of evolving humanity. So we can just read in these words, I'm just saying this now, that the goal shifted up one initiation for each root race, right? Now, you could say that you are the perfected human being when you take the fifth initiation, and you're not required actually to go any further than that. The fourth initiation was that stage for the Atlantean root race, and the third for the Lemurian. So, whereas Hatha Yoga coordinated the physical and Bhakti Yogi purified the emotional, Raja Yoga is the science of mental control. By focusing consciousness in the soul via the mind, the lower vehicles are automatically controlled from above. This makes the lesser yogas unnecessary for the advanced Aryan aspirant, as the results gained through Laya and Bhakti Yogas are included in Raja Yoga. The fifth initiation is specifically appropriate for the Aryan race because it is the first race biologically and spiritually equipped to handle the subjugation of the mental body. And finally, and this will be our last reading for today, thus all the yogas have had their place and served a useful purpose, and it will become apparent that any return to Hatha Yoga practices or those practices which deal specifically with the development of the centers brought about through various types of meditation practices and breathing exercises is from a certain aspect a retrogression. So while engaging in practices specifically designed to awaken the chakras or control the physical body through breathing were essential for humanity's past development, continuing these practices today is not just retrogressive, but can actually be dangerous. Yeah, and of course, this doesn't mean you can't use Hatha Yoga to stretch. You know, all of this has to be taken in the sense that it was intended, which is that the main form of spiritual progression, right? Okay, we'll stop here for today, and we'll pick up next time, which will be the first Sunday of next month, I assume. Is that correct, BL?
Nope.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're fine.
Okay. The full moon is on the 1st, so we can't do it then. So we're having it on the 8th of February, and it will be at 8:30, so it's a little later, and it's that second Sunday. All right.
30 minutes later,
Yeah,
and
30 minutes later.
it's better.
We have a very aggressive schedule, and so we do our best to work with everybody else doing webinars and stuff. Okay, so coming up is TCF on the 9th of January.
Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And
Right, and then Secret Doctrine on the 18th of January, but that will also be at 8:30.
okay, so watch your times. You probably all get constant contact notifications in your email. So just be aware that they'll be at 30 minutes later, and in case of Light of the Soul on the following Sunday instead of the first Sunday. And yes, this is a terrific crowd. I would invite all of you who haven't participated in a treatise on cosmic fire to join us next Friday. Give it a try. See how it works for you. Okay, let me look at the chats and see if there's any specific chats that I want to take a look at. Lot of thank yous. Yeah. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Yes, Carol.
Just wanted to know, is a treatise on a cosmic fire, is it going to be a different time? Is it later too?
No.
Next Friday? Oh, it stays the same. Okay.
It'll be at the same time on Friday. They're all at this the same time as today's webinar was, unless we have to bump it for another event.
Oh,
So
it's just schedule
well,
conflicting. Okay.
but the usual is so Tia has an interesting comment. The Pluto and Virgo generation coming into leadership with one of its elements of emphasis being health and wellness, which is filtering into the wider consciousness. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was part of a wider discussion on
Right.
new trends coming in with younger people.
Right. Okay, you all. Thank you all for attending, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.